The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke. We're not streaming live video today. Fantasy Football Podcast is going live at the same time, so we're deferring to that. But hey, we're happy to get to you straight to your favorite podcast devices. Fred, a lot going on. You and I are in a couple of leagues together here. How are your teams doing? We start off with our Reds and Jays. Let's start off with our fantasy teams for a sec.
Oh yeah, because it's a fantasy podcast. I forgot all. It's not a Jays Reds fandom podcast
or therapy for the two of us. Nothing like
yeah,
that. No.
Yeah, you don't need therapy anymore. You're going to the playoffs, anyways. Tout War is good. Labor not good. NFBC leagues good, but need to be better. So all my NFBC teams, I have so many second place teams right now. So yeah. I've got a lot of teams. I've got a couple fourths. So I've got some teams that are good and are in contention and need to be better. I spent a long time on my waiver bids on the weekend.
Me too.
And I'm probably going to do the same the next couple weeks and really see if I can. What I can do to push these teams up. The Tout Wars team, you rarely ever get me to say this. I think my Tout Wars team is mostly in cruise control from here on out. My labor team and my labor team's hopeless.
That's funny.
So I will do my labor bids for the rest of the season. I fully believe in competing all the way to the end, no matter what place you're in. I've always said that. I mean, I was up to like, I don't know, sixth or seventh and kind of floating around 90 points or so, which was good. And then I plummeted back down to like high 70s. And I'll do my bids, but the labor ones will come last and they will be. I'll spend a lot less time. I'll do all my other teams first, and then I'll take the common names that I've been looking at and apply them in there.
So my Tout Wars team is hopeless. Okay. Similar to your description of your labor team, although I think your labor team's not dead yet. We'll
go look at the roster.
Okay.
Anyways, no, I get Francisco Lindor back. That's huge.
Oh, he's back today. What a disaster. What are you going to do with him next year? You going to buy the dip?
Knowing me, I probably will. I've always been a Lindor guy. I've also always been a five category early round guy, like a power speed mix early round guy. So, and he fits. So I could see me buying the dip. If he's going to go on round five or six, I could see me buying that dip.
Yeah. I'm looking at your roster now, by the way. And okay. Yeah. You can still need another middle infielder.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Like those guys are not mixed league worthy players. I could not find middle infielders in that league all season. And I haven't traded as aggressively as I should have.
I'm hoarding. I've got a lot of them. I've got like five.
It's worked. Yeah. And I had good pitching and my pitching's pretty good. I traded Framber Valdez for Jazz Chisholm. So that solved one middle infield spot. And I felt like I had enough pitching to make that work. Especially I'll get Rodon back. So with Woodruff and Rodon, and then I got some other just solid pitchers. But yeah, I don't think I really just don't think that team has enough offense to catch up. So I think that team's offense is not better than my Tout Wars offense, and my Tout Wars offense is an NL only. So that's a big problem.
Well, you're going for the repeat in Tout Wars.
Yes, I am.
Holy cow. So, I'm looking at your stats. What happened to the OBP, Fred? Everything else looks great. No, just kidding.
Yeah, I've kind of let the OBP just slide around the middle in an effort to try to get counting stats. Now, I was way out in front in counting stats, and then I had a period of about 2 weeks where all my hitters were hurt. And I was fielding, and I kid you not, I was having days where I only had maybe five hitters play. Like, not play well, just play at all. I had Tatis. I had Lindor. I just traded Ozzie Albies, which I kind of regretted because right after I traded him, all my guys got hurt. I had Longoria. Yastrzemski went on the IL. Like, it was just Max Muncy briefly went on, like, the parenting IL or whatever it's called. Anyways, I had so many guys. I would have, like, four or five guys in my lineup. David Bode was out. Everyone was hurt. But now they've all come back, or mostly come back.
Okay, so, well, that's good.
Yeah. So now I think I can probably compete. Oh, and I lost Bauer in that league.
Yeah.
Which is pretty huge in an NL only.
Massive. Massive. So, and yet you're 20 points in first place ahead of Phil Hurts and Derek Carty. So
yeah, I managed to solve the pitching. I've come way back to the pack in the hitting, and I think I will lose some hitting points. But I think even if I lose some hitting points, as long as my pitching, I got Walker Buehler for Ozzie Albies, and which was a fair deal, I think. And Castillo, Luis Castillo has been good. And I found some pitchers. I got Husker. Enoa back. So I think I have plenty. I think I have enough pitching to just stay. I don't know if I can keep my current point total, but I think I could keep 95 or something like that.
Wall puncher, Enoa. Yeah.
Good pitcher, though.
Good pitcher. Struggled a little bit against the Yankees yesterday?
Yeah.
By the way, Stanton just homered in that game today, and that's the thing. We never broadcast during live games, but
that's right.
I was distracted a little bit, and I apologize for that, because they were showing like a Braves fan wrestling another fan to prevent them from throwing the ball back. And I happen to agree with that take. I think it's so dumb. I mean, it's one thing for Wrigley fans to do it, you know, it's tradition and all that, downtrodden franchise, et cetera, et cetera. How often do you get a baseball at a ball game, especially a home run ball? I don't care if it's from the other team. Keep that darn thing.
I agree. So I'm not watching this. You're saying that the person did not want to throw the ball back and someone came over and started wrestling them to try to make them throw the ball back.
No, the opposite. The opposite. The guy that got it was rearing back to throw it back, and his buddy next to him.
Oh, his friend was like, "Don't throw it back."
Yeah.
Right. I guess if you're friends, then that would work. If the guy wasn't your friend, then you're being way too presumptuous. Just leave the guy alone. Leave the guy alone. It's his mistake to make.
Yeah.
So
I hope it was a buddy. I mean, I obviously have it on mute here, but
I just met this guy on the walk in, but I'm not letting him make this life error.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyways, I agree with you. I would keep the ball if it's just a home run, just in a regular season game. Keep the ball.
Yeah. Your White Sox, I mean, your Blue Jays, excuse me, what a slip there.
Maybe I'll slip over to the White Sox now.
Yeah. The White Sox are up 4-0 on the Blue Jays. They got to Jose Berríos all in the first inning. You know, first two starts are pretty good for Berríos, and lately not so much. I think, you know, it's tough opponents have gotten to him, but still, this is not promising at all. He got hit by the Nats over the weekend. You know, last week. So, what's up with Berríos?
Wait, you mean Jose Berríos is inconsistent?
Yeah.
No way. I mean, this is who the Jays got. This is the Jose Berríos I feel like we've seen his entire time with the Twins. He'll have stretches where he has a few great starts. He'll have a few maddening starts and some not great starts. And at the end of the year, his ERA will be around four. High threes, 3.8, four, whatever. Like, he's never been able to put it together and be like a 3 ERA pitcher, a competitive for the Cy Young Award. We went for years where people would predict that might happen. It never happened. I don't think it's going to happen. I think the Jays picked up an above average, pretty good major league starter.
Yeah.
That trade and gave up.
We talked about that. I think. Yeah. We talked about that before, how you didn't like the trade.
Yeah.
Two good prospects on that one. I like the pitcher too.
Yeah.
Simeon Woods Richardson.
Yeah. Isn't having a good year in the minors, but still a good prospect.
Yeah. And I was also with you on, I have no Berríos on any of my teams, because I always thought that SP2 price that you're paying for him is too high. I think he's more like if you're your third starter, okay, maybe. If he's like your eighth or ninth round guy in a mixed league event, sure, great. But he was going like fourth, fifth round in 15 teamers. So
yeah,
no thanks.
there was a couple years. Yeah, there were a few years where we were kind of collectively pushing for him to take the next step, and that didn't happen. So, you know what I mean? Since now, I think we're just past that, but he's still going pretty high. So, yeah. You know who I wanted to ask you about, actually, because he's on my Tout Wars and your labor team. I just pulled up your labor team, and we talked about him back in March. How have you enjoyed the Kenley Jansen experience? Because I tried to trade him in Tout Wars, and nobody wanted him. I mean, I considered to be just a reasonable price. Like, nobody wanted him at the price of he's a closer. And so I kept him, and I traded my other closers. And I haven't minded it. You just have to live with the fact that the Dodgers have already generated about 10 saves that he doesn't get. So, but they're so good that he still gets plenty.
Yeah, and he had one rough stretch. And then aside from that, he's been pretty good.
Too many walks.
The cost was right, too. He was, you know, about the eighth or ninth closer going off the boards. I mean, every year he delivers 27 saves this year. I mean,
so he'll get 32, Ks. 33, something like that. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it's not pretty right now, but, you know, sometimes, you know, closers have to evolve and, you know, change a little bit. And it seems like he's kind of going through that. They have to protect him a little bit. But
absolutely.
He's going to probably end up in the mid-30s somewhere when saves.
Yep.
You told me that at the beginning of the season. I take it.
Absolutely. I think he's interesting in that, he's – if he was peak Kenley Jansen on this Dodgers team or last year's Dodgers team, like he'd have 43 saves, something like that. Like I said, there's 11 saves on the Dodgers this year that he hasn't had. A couple of those would have been long relief saves, or maybe he was getting the days off, but he could have easily had 35 already if he was peak Kenley Jansen. He's not peak Kenley Jansen. You just live with that because you didn't pay peak Kenley Jansen price for him. He's going to blow a few. There's a few days where I never up when a Dodgers game ends during the week. So there's a few days where I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, lost Kenley Jansen. Oh, one inning, three runs. Well, that sucks. And then, but then they keep going right back to him. And I don't think they're even fully committed to using him in the postseason if they don't want to, like as their closer. I think they'll use him if he's going well. And if he's not, they'll use Knebel or Trinan or whatever. But they're fine with him just getting most of their saves during the season.
Yep.
And he's not hurting them and he walks too many batters. But yeah, I felt like he was someone who in draft season, I don't know, he's older a little bit. He's on the way down for sure. Nobody wanted him. I don't have him in a lot of leagues. You were a little more of a proponent of him. I think it's worked out totally fine. And part of it is that the Dodgers are really good and generate plenty of save chances.
The other part of it too is the closers are just a minefield.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many bad closers out there that, you know, okay, well, fine. He's not perfect, but I know he's got the job, and it would just take a total implosion for him to not keep it. And that's kind of what's happened here.
That's right. And I'll say, like, I haven't looked into Kenley Jansen's contract or his status with the Dodgers next year, but assuming he's back on the Dodgers next year and is still their closer, I'll project him for, I don't know, 30 saves, 28 saves, something a little conservative, but something like that. And if people want to leave him for me in round 13 or 12 or something after a closer run, I'll take him.
Yeah, there's only five guys that have more saves than him.
Yeah.
Four of which have one more save. Hendricks, McGee, Will Smith, and Alex Ruiz. By the way, Jake McGee at 28 saves. Now, that's a windfall. But and then Melanson's at 34. He's slowed down a lot, as the team has. And Iglesias is tied with Jansen. But point is, you know, you're doing just fine. Contract-wise for him, he signed a five-year deal December of 2016. So 17, 18, 19, 20. This is last year.
This is it. Massive. So we'll see where he ends up next season and what his role will be. I could see him, though, being a closer again, whether it's on the Dodgers or somewhere else.
Right. That'll be an interesting question.
I think he'll get a closer contract, and it won't be a great closer contract. It might be a one-year closer contract, but I think he'll get a closer contract. Now, if he's not on the Dodgers and he's on a little bit of a worse team and a harder place to pitch and where he doesn't have as much, you know, street cred and like built up legacy as he does on the Dodgers, I might be a little more pessimistic of him.
Fair enough. I mean, there's a lot of things, a lot of ellipses we need to fill, including like what sort of budget every team is going to have. Is there going to be more of a cap situation, as was leaked as a possibility of an offer here, where, okay, we'll have a salary floor of $100 million, but we're also going to have a tax starting at $180 million. You realize that tax is well over $200 million right now. That's a severe cut.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing, you know, you cut closer costs pretty quickly, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And it will. And if that were to happen, it would take teams like the Dodgers right out of free agency. Well, it's up to them how much of the tax they want to spend, but it would take them probably a lot out of free agency, and it would force the Kenley Jansons and all the other free agents this winter to go to these teams that are currently at least middle of the pack in contracts, if not lower. It will create a very ugly offseason, a long, patient, you know, just nails on the chalkboard offseason, which we as baseball fans have gotten used to because we've had some of those in the winter where nobody signs anyone and it takes forever because nobody wants to spend and nobody wants to make the first move and the players don't want to, they want to hold out for something good. I could see that happening this year more than ever.
Yeah. Winter is coming. It's going to be really, really tough. Going back to your Jays real quick, they're now 11 games out in the East. Tampa, I mean, somehow Tampa is just, they've got a 4-game lead. Even the Yankees winning every game in creation, they're still 4 games behind the Rays. Rays had the best record in the AL. They passed the Astros. They passed the White Sox. They trade away their closer. They trade away Snell. They let Charlie Morton walk. And, yep, they're 77-48 somehow.
Yeah, never doubt them. Never doubt the Rays. Yeah. They will find a way. They will platoon and opener and mix and match their way into at least a good record, if not a great record. I really don't think that this Rays team is a real World Series contender, but I'm incredibly impressed with how well they've done during the regular season.
Yep. And they make bad trades too. They traded away Willy Adames for a couple of relievers.
Yeah.
We'll see what if like those guys, you know, turn out to be really, you know, nails in the playoffs or later on, but still, Adames certainly has paid off for the Brewers. They're your Jays are 4.5 out in the wild card as well. The A's are kind of slipping. They're actually a game and a half behind the Yankees behind the Red Sox, 4 games behind the Yankees in the wild card. Let's face it, at the beginning of the year, we're thinking, okay, there might be 3 teams in the AL East that get to the playoffs. We didn't, I don't know if we expected it in this order, but here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And it could be. I still think the A's have a really good chance to get back in there. Interestingly, the Jays don't play the Red Sox again this season, so they're going to have to catch them without playing them. They do play the Yankees a lot. I think for the Jays to have a chance, they need to go on a run. They need one of those 9-10 stretches, and preferably that 9-10 stretch needs to cover one of their, I think, 2 remaining Yankees series. I think they need to play a Yankees series where they win 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 or something like that, and then that's immersed in maybe a sweep in another series, and then that really pushes them back into the race. I don't know if this is just quite the Jays year. I think they're going to have 5 or 6 years with Bichette and Vlad and all these guys and be like right in there. They're terrible. It's just not their year. They've had a terrible record in one run games. They've been a little unlucky. The offense has fallen flat a couple times when they really needed it, although it's been really good overall. I just don't know if this is their year. I think they're just still building. Like, this was Vlad's breakout year. Bichette, interestingly enough, I just noticed this morning, I was going to mention this in our notes, but I didn't want to get too granular on him, but his OPS has dropped below 800, which is not typically what you think of for a superstar.
Right.
Usually think of that at OPS being above 800. Now I know he could have a good week and it could be 820 again or something like that. But yeah, like, he's been good this year, but more fantasy good than real life good, and more counting stats good in real life because he's constantly hitting high in a really good lineup than where he's someone with like an 885 OPS who's just totally dominating. That hasn't been him this year. So I think there's room even for growth for some of these guys.
I'd agree with that. Something to watch for there.
Yeah.
Before we talk about my Reds and talk about some of the other news and notes going around the league, a quick note from our title sponsor, WinBet. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want to take a break from sports betting? Head into WinBet's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WinBet is currently available in 6 states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet now. That's WynnBet. WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thanks to WinBet and our Blue Wire sponsors for those notes there. We appreciate their sponsorship. Let's talk Reds real quick. You know, it's pulling teeth for me to get to talk Reds. big series coming up. If there's any chance to win the division, they have to take at least 2 out of 3, probably all three.
I'd say all three, yeah.
Yeah, it's all three. They're 7.5 back. The Brewers are just that good. It's like, you know, even every time, you know, Reds are on this incredible run. I think, as you pointed out, they have the best. They lead the majors in OPS in August. Joey Votto has been amazing. Still trade him in labor. We'll talk about that in a second. And yet they're gaining no ground on Milwaukee. It's crazy. Every time the Reds win, I turn up and, oh, there's Milwaukee winning. Partially because they're playing similar schedules. They're beating up on the NL Central. Reds got the Marlins over the weekend. That was nice and handy. You have to win those games, but they're really taking advantage of a really, really nice, comfortable, friendly schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, it'll be hard to catch the Brewers because although the Reds have an easy schedule, the Brewers also have an easy schedule. So I don't think, like you said, they need a sweep. And beyond that, I don't think it's going to happen. But aiming for the wild card and a one game playoff with the Dodgers or the Giants, I think would be a great ending for where the Reds were, I think, going into this season. They don't have like a total ace to throw in that one game playoff, although Castillo's right. pitched a lot better recently. But if they get the Giants, like, I don't know that the Giants really have a total ace. Gossman's hasn't been quite as consistent in the second half. The Reds will be underdogs in that game, no matter who they play, but it's one game and it's baseball. They could totally win it.
It's almost every option though that the Giants have to throw against them is a former Red. Gossman, Desclafani, Alex Wood, Johnny Cueto, all it's former true. Reds at one point in time. Unless they throw a Webb at them, that would be the exception. And Webb's probably been their best pitcher lately.
He would be, yes. Webb would be a good for them to throw at them. The other interesting thing about them is most of those guys you just mentioned are right-handed. Wood's not, but most of them are right-handed. And the Reds are better against righties. I think they'd start a right-hander anyways. The Dodgers, unless they could get Kershaw in there, I guess they could get Arias in there.
Just like came off the IL today.
But it'd be hard not to start Bueller or Scherzer. So there's a good chance that if the Reds get to that one game playoff, that they'll get to face a right-hander, which is right up, you know, Winker's alley and Votto's alley and the team in general.
Yeah, I'm still hoping they get there. I'm going to not worry about who they face and who they play. I mean, I have preferences, obviously, but let's face it. You know, they just finally passed the Padres. Padres have been sinking for a while, 2 out of their last 10. They just fired their pitching coach. The Padres did, and Larry Rothschild. The Padres are a mess. They get Darvish back this week, probably, and that'll be big for them. But their starting pitching is just – it's really fallen apart lately.
Absolutely. And I also think that the Padres, for them, I think they could really use Tatis to go on a run because he's capable of that. And when he first came back that first game, he was bananas. He got the 4 hits and the 2 homers. Of course, he was still on my IR in labor and pretty much Aaron Tedwars and pretty much anyone else's team. But that's beside the point. Since that game, he's played, let's see here, 3-6 other games. Three of them are at Coors Field. Mm-hmm. In those 6 games, he has 3 hits. So they need him to go on a run. He's the kind of guy, right? Like he's the kind of guy who could have a five homer week. He hits 400 with five homers some week or four homers or something like that, and just powers their offense for a while and gets them on a bit of a heater. And maybe the other guys get going around him. I feel like it's asking a lot of Tatis. We know his shoulder's right. Probably not 100%, but he is, you know, right there in the discussion for the most talented, you know, hitter in baseball. So I think that's what they could really use, is for Tatis to go on a run and really get them going, maybe overshadow a couple of weak pitching performances. And then maybe they get things get going around him.
Yeah. And the lineup gets better around him when he's in there and he's firing on all cylinders. All of a sudden, if you have to pitch around Tatis, then all of a sudden Machado's in a better spot. Cronenworth's in a better spot. Mm-hmm. Now, but they, you know, they've kind of scuffled a little bit here and there. They got knocked around by the Phillies over the weekend it's tough to watch, because remember, you know, Padres and Dodgers are playing each other this week right now. And, you know, we're like, oh, when do these guys meet up again? We're talking about this. It's a shame that if they face each other, it'll have to be as, you know, a one game play-in, because there's no way for them to meet up in the finals. Well, there might be a way now. I mean, it's kind of funny. It's just, you know, I feel bad for the Padres because they've tried. I always want teams that have tried to do well. I think we talked about that last week.
We did. Yeah. And they should still have a window. A lot of their guys are still under contract next season. You know, Tatis could be better next year. Maybe the shoulder holds up better after an offseason arrest and everything. So I mean, they should have a window now of a few years, but this was for sure a big part of that open window.
Going back to my Reds, Joey Votto has been amazing. Awesome. Yeah. He just decided he wanted to hit homers, and okay, I'll hit homers now. I'll swing with more of an uppercut. And he's been able to do it just on the fly. It's worked. It's a sight to behold.
And you traded him.
I did. I traded for him.
Yeah.
Let's set that record straight. As people well know, you and I made a trade. I traded in Kennedy for him. I'm trying to emulate you. Just everybody's tradable for the right price, right?
They are. Yeah. So when you traded him for Max Fried, correct?
I did trade him for Max Fried.
Which is a trade that would have looked amazing at the beginning of the season, but now looks fair. So did you actively try to not trade Votto? Just because it's Votto and it's your Reds, you know, it was with Steve Gardner. Is that correct?
It is.
When you were talking to Steve, was there ever a point in the discussions where you're like, could you take someone else? Like, could you take Chris Bryant? Could you take...
As a matter of fact, he said he'd do it for either Votto or Bryant. And I chose Votto. Because Bryant runs a little bit.
Yeah.
Votto does not.
Yeah.
And if you look at the standings, I'm tied for first in home runs, right? With this Zach Steinhorn from Creative Sports, who you made a trade with. I'm for second in RBI. However, I've got like 5.5 points in wins. Mm-hmm. My ERA and WHIP are okay, but they could be better. I need starting pitching. And a lot of the offers I was getting were for lesser pitchers. I thought Fried was the best pitcher that I'd been offered so far, at least on a one-to-one deal. We can talk about, you know, the deal that didn't happen with us so far. And I kind of thought that, you know, that partially because I was traveling a lot last week, and so we were just doing it by, you know, direct message and things like that. I actually pulled the trade off on the plane on the flight home from North Carolina and just was emailing with Steve. And, you know, I thought Fried was the best pitcher. Plus, Atlanta has a very nice schedule in September. They're red hot right now. They've been riding this schedule. I thought that, you know, someone who is chasing wins, got to get a guy on a good team. Atlanta qualifies.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, actually. The more I look at your roster, so Bryant's actually your only third base eligible player. So that alone would mean that I couldn't trade Bryant. Like, I'd have to trade Votto.
I thought I had another third base eligible
player. I don't think so.
I think you're right, actually. I think you're right.
So that's huge. Like, had you traded Bryant, and that was actually the situation when I traded you Votto, was that I had Freeman, Hosmer, Votto, and Franmil Reyes jamming up my utility spot. So I just didn't have room for Votto. Now in the end, I should have traded you Hosmer, but I didn't know that at the time, but you have extra first baseman. They're not amazing, but you have extra first baseman and you don't have extra third baseman. So that makes sense. It's just so hard to, but it's fantasy. I get it. I would do the same thing, but I just wondered to what degree you hesitated and thought,
traded my favorite player.
Can I give you Adam Duvall instead? Can I give you, You know, I mean, Adam Duvall, you say, come on, I'm going to take him Votto. But Adam Duvall has almost same amount of home runs, more RBIs. You know what I mean? Like, Adam Duvall's been really productive this year. Yeah.
Well, but, and I'm glad you brought that up because it's kind of cool that if you look at my team and I have, you know, I'm having a good year with these guys, but it's funny. I don't have like that one guy that's carrying me. I have, which is actually very advantageous. If you're getting 20 homers from lots of different guys, you're going to add up. And I have 20 homers from Cesar Hernandez, 24 from Baez, who is back this week. Chris Bryant's got 22. Dansby Swanson, 25-9. A little appreciation for Dansby Swanson. Love him. Doubled again today, by the way. It's really nice. 27 from Duvall. Teoscar Hernandez, who, you know, is a favorite of mine. Yeah. 22, 84. Hitting 305,
305 is amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's been amazing. I wish I had more of Teoscar, but point is that's it's spreading it out. Plus, I've got guys like 15 and 17 here and there. AJ Pollock's been just on fire. He's been a lot of fun. So I can trade one guy and I feel like I'm not going to lose out a whole lot there. And I know I need starting pitching help.
Yeah. And what's amazing about your team is, and this goes into so much of like how we think we know when we draft, but we don't know. You started pitcher. Like you started with Cole and Giolito. Like you started pitcher. So you would think at this time of the year, it would be your home run stats that were not good enough and your pitching would be really good. And Cole's been pretty much everything that you could have wanted. I mean, if he's off pace of what you could have wanted, it's not by much. Giolito obviously hasn't been quite what you wanted, but he's still been quite good and helpful. And, you know, and you have closers and everything else. So in Sandy Alcantara in the middle rounds, like kind of early middle rounds, like has worked out fine, but it's your hitting that's been
mostly
really good.
Fine. He's frustrating.
Yeah, but it's all, if you just put him in line, I mean, he's only at seven.
He's not frustrating. The Marlins.
The Marlins are frustrating. The seven wins are frustrating, but the ratios are good. The strikeouts are actually what we expected. He's not a huge strikeout guy. Right. But it's just a neat example that you can build a really good offense without taking hitters in the first couple rounds. Cause that's what you did.
Yeah. And I made a point of pounding hitters after those first two. Real Muto, Grisham, Hernandez, Baez, Swanson, Chris Bryant. Got Kenley in the ninth. Then one of my biggest whiffs of the year, Clint Frazier in the 10th round.
Yeah.
I have Clint Frazier in so many different leagues, Fred. And boy, was I wrong. I was aggressively wrong on him. He has been, he's been awful. He's been hurt, and he's long-term hurt. It's really been frustrating.
Yeah, yeah, that's one that, well, I guess you can't put it out of your mind because you want to learn from it from next year. If you think there's anything to glean from it for next year, I don't know what exactly the takeaway is there, but yeah, he's been, he was your guy, I think, who you probably mentioned the most and got the least out of this year.
Perhaps, definitely. Yeah. We did talk about it. I also whiffed really hard on Christian Walker.
Okay. He,
five homers this year. Five. One of them on Sunday, I think, against in Coors Field. And then the guy, I took a huge whiff on a guy I never, I always talk about not taking. Leody Taveras, you know, the speed goof, you know, and he can't hit, period. You know, he was awful. Barely lasted 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. What's good is you took him at least late enough that he can't really sewer you. So it's fine, but you're right. Like that's the kind of guy that you usually rally against taking, what's good is like I said, looking at your lineup, like also not only did you not take hitters in the first couple rounds, you aren't the guy who ran into Vlad, Otani, something like that. Like you don't have a guy on your team with 30 home runs yet. You know, Votto was your leader. Now Duvall is your leader. You don't have a guy with 15 steals. They're just accumulating. Right. And I think that's a great way to build an offense.
Yeah, it's handy. Now, I'd like to have those guys and just blow everyone out of the water. That would be great. That hasn't happened.
Yes.
So unfortunately, yeah. And yeah, so we'll see how I can, we finish off. Now, we're talking about a glorious fourth place run so far. So let's not get too proud of ourselves on that one there. You made a trade in this league too.
Yeah, I picked up Jazz Chisholm. Traded Framber Valdez. I like Framber Valdez a lot. He was probably my favorite, like non-ace, like but maybe could be an ace type pitcher. Those guys who are knocking on the door who could maybe be an ace before he got hurt in spring training. Mm-hmm. He's been fine since he's been back. He's been good actually, and His control just hasn't been quite as good as maybe we were hoping for. Right. In certain situations, I wouldn't trade him for Jazz Chisholm, but my middle infield is a total mess, and I do have a fair amount of pitching. I was the guy who grabbed Alek Manoah off waivers, and some of my pitchers have worked out. Well, I got them back, at least. I got Eliezer Hernandez back, and I found Alex Wood early in the season. I've got Woodruff, I've got Rodon, so I've got some pitching. So I made that trade. I don't think it's a win trade, but my team just can't hit. And Jazz Chisholm is the kind of guy who could have some really big weeks. We'll see. He also has some really bad weeks, but he's got 14 homers and 13 steals, and he's missed a decent chunk of the season with an injury. So, if he had been healthy all season, he might be a 2020 guy right now. So he's that kind of guy who can maybe have some big weeks for me down the stretch. We'll see about that, but at least there's potential there.
Yeah, there is. Maybe I'll try to get one more starter, trade a middle infielder for you. I mean, I've got, I know you're not a big Cesar Hernandez family, but I do have Javi Baez, Dansby Swanson, Josh Rojas, Jed Lowry. I've got, infielders coming out of my ears. So that's good. It's good to have that. I guess I did a little hoarding there, I suppose, but that's okay. I didn't hoard starting pitching apparently, or at least I didn't do a good job of it there.
Yeah.
We had a fab battle on Joe Barlow, and that lasted all of it did nothing for us. I don't think I got anything out of him. He's on the IL.
Trust
now.
Me, he didn't, because I didn't get anything out of him in my other leagues. But he could come back. It's labor, so you can hold him in your IL, and he could come back and get you some saves at some point. So if it was NFBC, it'd be even more frustrating because you'd probably have to cut him because you need the roster spot. But in labor, you can stash him. Maybe he closes the last 3 weeks of the season or something.
Yep. There's not like there's anybody established in Texas. You can go on to the next guy there, but the only problem is they might not have too many save opportunities to go chase, but we'll see.
Right.
We'll talk more about closers, and in fact, just talk about some of the bad closers in baseball right now. But first, a note from our friends at Thrive. NFL is back on Thrive Fantasy. Thrive Fantasy has over $100,000 guaranteed for NFL Week 1. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus on only the top-tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Sign up today and get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you claim your free RotoWire subscription. 1. Visit rotowire.com/thrive. 2. Deposit a minimum of $10 and receive 100% deposit bonus up to $100. 3. Play in your first paid contest and receive a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Easy peasy. That's all you have to do. Thanks to the folks at Thrive for that. Okay, so you brought up Daniel Bard, who is, not good. Not good, but you don't always have to be good and still be valuable in fantasy.
Better to be lucky than good. I guess that's the going back to the famous line. In his case, that matters. He's blown 7 saves this year, but they keep running him out there. He's got 7 wins. He's got 20 saves. That's good in this era. Yep. Terrible ERA, 4.68. Even worse WHIP, 1.56. But he's got you 20 saves and 7 wins, and you probably got him in round, I don't know, beyond this. You got him in the second half of your draft somewhere. So this is a weird season. This is the kind of, I guess this is what counts as a successful season from a Rockies closer.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's right. So it made me think about, like you were talking about, okay, other bad closer seasons. The all-time had to be Brad Lidge. 8 losses, 7.21 ERA, yet he still got you 31 saves that year.
Unbelievable. 0-8. Like, they couldn't even pick him up in the 11 blown saves and give him a win. 0-8 in those, but they still went with him for 31 saves. So yeah, that one's got to be about as bad as it gets.
Charlie Manuel, the all time and loyalty to a closer, I guess. But
I guess,
and he bounced back in at good seasons after that.
I was going to say, like, the year before he was amazing. The year after, he was pretty good, and then not much, and his career basically fizzled after that. But yeah, I mean, it does show, I guess, that like he's an example of someone who had built up a lot of currency on his team, right? He had several years of being the closer and being a good reliever for them. So that built him up some, well, I guess not always with the Phillies, but just in general in baseball with Houston and with the Phillies. So anyways, but with Bard, he didn't even have that. Like, it's not like Bard has been, a long time closer or anything like that. He was a neat story last season, but that's about it. So if you told me that Bard would have a 156 whip right now, you know, how many saves would he have? I would say, I would not say 20. If you'd asked me that back in March.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I think of also some of the Rockies closers over the years, because they've had a lot of guys like that. I mean, it's impossible to pitch in Coors Field.
Yep.
You can get some bad years. Sean Chacon comes to mind, though, as a guy that had a similar type of season. Okay, check this out. In 2004, 35 saves. Okay, great. A 7.11 whip, a 1-9 record, or 7.11 ERA.
Excuse me.
7.11 whip would be like criminal. 1.942 whip. Even as FIP, he wasn't unlucky. 6.57 FIP ERA. I mean, it was just hideous. I mean, there's, and it's just thing, it's really hard to pitch there. I get it. And it just shows, though, that saves from bad closers can still happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Houston Street is someone who I thought of who, you know, went to Colorado. He was a closer for a couple years. He was okay in those 2 years. He got 49 saves and his ERA both years was under four. His whips were decent. He was okay. And then they got him out of there and he went to San Diego and then was better in San Diego, not surprisingly, than he was. But he was someone who I remember thinking like he barely did it. He's one of the guys who did it, who pitched in Coors, was a closer, you know, got his 20 something saves. Now, when he got his 20 something saves, that was 2009 and 10. That's the time when a lot of guys were getting 35, 40 when he was getting 20 something. So it still wasn't great because the Rockies play a lot of lopsided games in Coors Field. So that hurts their closer too. So, you know, I won't be after Bard next year, even if he is still their closer, even no matter what happens the rest of the season. I can't see me round 25, sure, round 23 or something, but no, he won't still be there. Someone will go for him.
Yeah, 4.68 or ERA in this era, that's not even that bad. I mean, it's right. Comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
So here's the more interesting question, I think, is, okay, you tell me at the beginning of the season, this is what his stats will be. Mm-hmm. You're going to get 7 wins out of him. You're going to get 20 saves. You just have to eat these ratios. You can't stream. You can't like pick your spots. You're getting 63 Ks also in 50 innings.
Yeah.
What is that worth to you?
A lot earlier than he was drafted. If I knew I was going to get the 7 wins. So, I mean, he probably finishes the season with maybe 8 wins and like 25 saves. Yeah. And now you've asked a question that takes me back to those retro drafts we did where you already knew the stats and where would you take them? Around 10, 12, something like that, probably, to get those wins and those saves, maybe around 12, something like that. And I'll eat the ratios. So, I mean, because especially, like you said, the ERA is not a killer. It doesn't help. It's not a killer. The whip is a killer.
He's not gobbering you.
He's not. He's not with 50 innings so far. He's not killing you. His ERA is basically a run over what your team ERA would be. Right. It's the whip that's like a good, like 30, 35 points over what your team will be.
Yeah. And let's not forget that Gomber isn't hurting you this year, by the way.
He's not. He's in my lineup after I traded away Framber Valdez in that labor league. I put Gomber in for this week.
I picked him up in a 12 this week.
Good. Yeah. I mean, he did have he's had a little bit of shakiness actually the last couple starts. So we'll see. One of them was at home though. One was at San Fran. They're good offense. I don't know. I'll believe in him at least through this week.
Yeah, because the original Gombering was at San Francisco. So that's true. He does get the Cubs this week, and I think the other starts pretty decent too. I think it is interesting. You know, you got to just eat some bad innings, but it's only 50 innings also. Think about that.
Yep.
A 4.68 at 50 innings. I you know, rather have that than, you know, 4.40 and 150 innings.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I can recover a little bit quicker from that. Plus, you're getting the goodness of saves, which is so hard to get.
Yeah, and in a season where there are no longer 30 closers, there's like 20 or 23 or something like that, right? So you're getting one of the 20 or 23 or whatever closers that there are in baseball when you take out all the situations like the Rays and the Reds and teams like that that don't have a closer.
Let's stipulate that we do have a regular season next year. What are you doing with the closer position?
I went early a lot this year. I don't regret it. I had one huge whiff, and that was in the main event. It was Trevor Rosenthal in round 6, and I got like a complete zero.
Yeah, but that's not like a skill whiff. That's just bad.
It wasn't, and it was too, and it's just too bad. So my other early round closers, and I think this is indicative of the early round closers this year. Josh Hader's been great. Liam Hendricks has been fine. Liam Hendricks hasn't been amazing, but he's been fine.
Right.
Chapman's been fine. He had that rough stretch, but overall he's been fine. I took Ryan Ryan Pressly early in a draft. He doesn't have as many saves as you would think would. Yeah. But that's not on him. Like, he's been fine. Right. So in general, if you took early closers this year and you didn't take Trevor Rosenthal, you know, your Iglesias was a pretty early closer this year. He's been good. I'm inclined to get at least one. I would be pretty sure that I'll take one in the first six or seven rounds next year at least, and then could take two. That'll probably be dependent on whether, when I'm projecting and ranking players, there's a guy who I like, who I think I can get later, you know, who I like versus his ADP. And if there's not, so in one draft, Jeff Zimmerman and I took Hader and Hendricks on the 3-4 turn from the 15 spot. And I don't regret it. And that team's doing good, but not great. But the problem with them isn't those guys. The problem was Cody Bellinger on the 1-2 turn. That was the bigger problem. And Trevor Story, actually, who hasn't been great either. He was on the 1-2 turn as well. But I don't regret the Hendricks Hader. Like, it's been fine. Like, we're at the top of the league in saves. And, you know, like I said, Hendricks could have been better, but he's been pretty good. And we haven't had to spend any fab or anything on closers during the season. So
that's huge right there, too.
Yeah.
You don't have the uncertainty.
I know. Now I will say the trickle down effect of that was that our first starter was Zach Greinke. I think that was on the 5-6 turn. I can't totally remember. He hasn't been great. He's been kind of, I guess, what Zach Greinke's supposed to be. We've mistimed him a couple times from our rotation, our bench, but it does hurt. You don't have an ace if you're going to.
But your first starter is someone you're considering benching. I mean, that's your sign right there, though, right?
Yeah, but his numbers are better than, maybe I shouldn't have ever considered benching him because his ERA and stuff, it's just the strikeout rate's really low.
Right.
I wouldn't mind next year getting an ace maybe in the first couple rounds, a closer in like rounds 4 or 5. And then if there's a closer I like in 6 or 7, maybe get another one. I don't know. It's early to think, but I think we have to start next year by deciding how many closers are there really in Major League Baseball and how many teams are telling us already they aren't going to have one.
Right.
We used to just roll our eyes at that, but we shouldn't anymore.
No, of course. David Bell said so much on the Saturday at 3:27, the main event. I'm doing it with Tim Schuler at the first break that he came out with this. We're going to share it. Like, okay, he says that, but it's going to be Amir. It's going to be Amir Garrett.
Right.
No, it was not Amir Garrett. Was emphatically not Amir Garrett, but it's
I know. So I'm starting to, when managers say this now, I'm starting to believe them. I remember, so I used to do the MLB.com fantasy podcast with Matthew Leach, who used to cover the Cardinals.
Yeah, I know Matthew. Yeah.
And he was in there, he was in that locker room for years, and he used to always say, and Matthew wasn't like a big fantasy guy, but he was a baseball guy, obviously. And he would say, from his years of covering teams, if a manager says he's not going to name a closer, you just wait. Like, he'll name a closer. There will be a closer. Some guy will get 3 saves in a row and he'll just become a closer. And back when we were doing that podcast, so say like 2015 or something, Matthew was usually right. But the last couple of years, it's changed. It's not all, it doesn't work that way. A lot of these teams who say they're not going to have a closer, they don't.
Yeah. Well, what I think is they all like to copycat what's working. And, you know, the Rays, it's working. The opener worked for them. Their management of the bullpen works for them. But two things have to happen. You have to have actually talented arms, and you have to have a manager who's got a deft touch at that. And I think Kevin Cash is underrated in his ability to manage the bullpen. Otherwise, you get these legions of copycats that are the lesser, you know, alternative. They're a lesser model of it there. And the Reds being a perfect example of that. I don't think Bell always has the best touch at when to pull a guy, when to bring in somebody else, who to bring in, all that. Although that said, I mean, you know, look at, you know, he might be a bad chef, but look at the ingredients that the owner of the restaurants bought him too.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I also think that just the mentality of relief pitchers themselves, I think Major League Baseball has changed that in the last 5 to 10 years where, you know, I used to think there was so much ego trip in being the closer, and that still exists to a point, but I think that's faded. Like, I don't think pitchers even in management around baseball think Daniel Bard is super valuable because he's getting saves. Like, they don't even believe that. And you look at teams with closers like the Dodgers, and if they don't feel like using Kenley, they just use someone else and nobody cares. And they'll just use him next time. And Knebel throw the ninth or something like that. Like, or trying and like, I think I think even players now have bought into this. Like when the Jays at the beginning of the year, when they lost Kirby Yates, they didn't really have a closer. And then they basically said, like, we don't care. Like, we'll figure it out. If we get good relief innings from our pitchers, we'll figure it out. And it was Merriweather, and then it was Dolis, and, you know, and now it's Romano, who ends up being their best reliever. But
who was the best reliever all along, by the way?
Probably. Although I do think Merriweather was going to be a good reliever.
I agree with you on that.
So, but they didn't care. They just wanted good relief innings. And I think even this has trickled down to pitchers, because baseball players are smart, I find, like in their ability to analyze their own sport compared to sometimes athletes in other sports, where, you know, they look at fan graphs and things like that, and they get it. If you're pitching against 3, 4, 5 hitters in the eighth inning, like, you just handled the highest leverage inning. They get that, and management gets it, and players get it. So I think now it has trickled down to the point where you don't have to manage egos as much in a major league bullpen as you used to. And you can have a Jordan Romano, and you can say, hey, tonight you're going in the eighth, because this is who we need you to face these guys. And he'll be like, yeah, perfect. Let's do this. Let's win the game. I think 10 years ago, you get brushed back from that pitcher, and he would say, no. Like, I'm the closer. Like, yeah,
you had more established closers.
You did. Too. That's right.
There are veterans that have been there in that spot. Whereas you don't, you know, and I just got distracted because Abasail Garcia crushed a ball, but it got caught on the warning track. So I'm happy now. But anyhow, you're right. And the thing is, you don't have that. So you had more guys, like, you're going to tell Sparky Lyle that? No, you're not going to do that. Although I'll say it has worked in previous eras. Look at the 1990 Reds. They did the Nasty Boys thing.
Yeah.
Where they had Dibble and Myers and Charlton. And, you know, Charlton was the young guy in that group, but they were able to kind of subsume their egos to make it work. But that's also because they were kicking ass and taking names, you know, and that helps. It wasn't on a bad team. It was on a very good team that got off to a great start that year.
Yeah, a modern example of that, I haven't heard any complaints from Craig Kimbrell since he got traded to the White Sox. Like, he's gone to the White Sox. He has had no saves as a member of the White Sox. He hasn't pitched as well for the White Sox as he did with the Cubs, but I'm sure he's trying. So I haven't heard anything from him saying, oh, I'm not pitching the eighth inning. I'm Craig Kimbrell. I got 371 career saves. I'm not pitching the eighth inning. Like, I think that you would have heard a huge stink about that 10 or 20 years ago from someone with Kimbrell's resume. Like, this is someone who can easily in his career, if it goes well, easily get to 500 saves. And could get beyond that if the way he bounced back this season, he's someone who could easily put together 30 save seasons, something like that. If he had finished this year with the Cubs, he's someone who could get to 500 career saves, which would be pretty impressive in this generation. You know, he gets traded to the White Sox. They already have a closer. He hasn't had a save yet. I haven't heard him complain. As I said, I don't know how that would have gone over as well. I don't know if that would have gone over as well previously, but I think he probably gets it. And he's still getting paid. He's got a contract.
That's the point. He's getting paid. He'll be getting paid next year too. I think that's another thing. It'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the White Sox in this offseason with him.
Yes.
Do they keep him around? Of course. All of this is predicated though on a deal getting done. I mean, we always say that's the thing that's super annoying right now. It's like, I want to speculate on player moves. I don't want to speculate on the CBA, but here we are. And that's going to dictate a lot of things too. Before we move on, a couple other notes before we sign off today, but quick note from our good friends at Yahoo. The new NFL season is fast approaching and Yahoo is excited to kick off daily fantasy football. Yahoo is excited to announce that its platform will now be shark-free. No Fred Zinke hanging out in your pool. To celebrate the opening of Yahoo Daily Fantasy Football and being shark-free, Yahoo is giving users the opportunity to claim free $10 in contest entry credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 contest entry credit offer to join Yahoo's Week 1 $1 million Baller Contest. The $1 million Baller Contest features $200,000 in guaranteed prizing overlay. 25% of the players entered will be paid out, including first place receiving $100,000 and an entry to the first ever Yahoo Fantasy Football Championship live finals event, which will occur at MGM Harbor National Harbor in Maryland this December. Play daily fantasy football on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim the free $10 offer. Avoid Fred Zinke. That's all you have to do. It's very simple, very easy. Fred, are you a daily player? I mean, I know you're kind of, I guess with Yahoo, you're kind of limited in what you can do, right?
Yeah, so I'm not a big daily player. But speaking of Yahoo and football, I do have some Yahoo football articles coming out next week. Next week. So I don't do a ton of football articles, but I do do a series, you know, as we get close to draft day, of some of my favorite value picks and guys I'm avoiding and things like that. And I've probably done so far about a half a dozen drafts. So, but because I'm not really in that football world of preaching who to take and who not to take, my voice never really gets out there. So so it's fun. I do that one series usually, you know, once I've done a bunch of drafts and get out some of my favorite, you know, players to target or fade. So those are coming out next week.
Nice. Looking forward to it.
There. Yeah.
Let's close off a couple other notes here. We got some late news from earlier in the day because we recorded later. Jacob DeGrom getting an MRI tomorrow. And we talked earlier about the do you drop. And yeah, and Phil DeSalt did so. And he's looking pretty darn smart right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think I would drop. I've seen him drop now in more leagues. I think we brought a lot of attention to that. We talked about Phil's thing. I did an article on it too, and then branched off into other players you can drop. And we talked about that article. So it got a lot of buzz, I think. And then I've seen more people in that NFBC universe drop DeGrom. So yeah, he's getting another MRI. The Mets are kind of falling out of it. I think you're pretty safe to drop him now. And the thing is, if you miss two DeGrom starts, I don't know. I don't know if that really changed your league. He's down to 90. I just looked it up. He's down to 92% in Yahoo. He was 99 when I wrote the article. So, okay. And nobody ever says 100. However they set their platform, you just say 99. So he's probably was 100, but he's down to 92. So there is movement.
There is. Yeah. What about Mike Trout? No rehab assignment yet. I've held on to him in my AL only league forever. And we don't even have an IL. I mean, we have three bench spots. It's an AL only league. It's my home league. It's the one that started RotoWire. I'm not winning this year. I did not win last year. I'm starting to get frustrated with, this whole Stars and Scrubs approach. It's not working so well right now.
Yeah, with Trout, I think because he's a position player, I would think I would hold a little while longer. Just with DeGrom, he's going to have to ramp back up. Trout's not to the same degree. He could go on a rehab assignment for a week, 5 days, something like that. You know, we could find out by the weekend that he's starting one on Monday and he's back by the end of next week. So I think I would hold him for another week or two. Trout's going to be a really interesting draft decision, I think, next year, just in the sense of, he's now hit 30 years old. This season, he's going to play 50 games or less probably. Right. You know, he's been consistently missing chunks of the season. Last year was pretty good, but it was such a short year. But the year before that, 134, and before that, 140, and before that, 114. I don't know. He's awesome. Mike Trout's a great player. He doesn't steal bases anymore at all. And he seems to have a bit of a knack the last few years for getting hurt. And those two things are a problem if you're taking someone in the first two rounds. So is he going to be in? He'll be in the first two rounds. I really think he will be on name value, but I will have no interest in Mike Trout in round one next year. I can almost guarantee that now, and probably not much interest in round two. And it's hard to say.
It kills me to say that.
But he could be the best player in baseball next year. He might be the best player still right now. He still has a 1090 OPS this year in the games he did play. He's awesome.
Yeah, he is.
But I don't think we'll see about round two. I'm sure I will have no interest in him because I'll have him projected for four steals. But I'm going to have to think about projecting him for 130 games or something like that and not 150.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, I think that's what we talked about last year. And then we said, screw it. I'm still going to take him and all that. Just a news item here, ongoing game. One of the things about doing the game, the pod while games are going on Tuesday night, Jack Flaherty is like losing velocity. He's given up back-to-back homers against the Tigers. Velocity is down, they said, and a trainer is going out. So remember, he spent a good amount of time on the IL, was good in his first couple starts back. Now, granted, it was an oblique injury. It wasn't an arm injury, but I'm worried. I'm really worried about this. And, you know, obviously, if you held on to Flaherty and you got him active now, this is devastating.
Yeah. And if he does end up on the IL, I think he'll be a drop. Just because he's already had an injury. you know, like you said, the velocity's down. If he does end up on the IL, you're probably looking at a mid-September return at the earliest. They could easily drop completely, you know, mathematically out, and he just doesn't come back at all. And then he'll be a really interesting guy next year. Last year was such a weird year with him with the COVID thing that interrupted the Cardinals season, and then his stats aren't good last year. But it got so messed up that it's hard to know what to take from that. The year before, he was great, and this year he was great, but if this ends up being him back on the IL, he might not make 15 starts next year. So he's going to end up being that boomer bust number two starter in fantasy next year. I think he won't have enough. You won't be able to project enough innings probably to put him in with the aces, yeah. But he'll be that boomer bust. Like this year, when we saw maybe around where we saw Corbin Burns this year, where you're like, this guy, if it turns out he could really dominate my league, but I don't know but I can't project him for enough innings to put him as my ace.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. I don't think he's got the boom potential of Burns, though. I mean, I don't know. I mean, unless something changes here.
I mean, this year he's 9-1 with a 2.68 ERA and a 0.96 WHIP. So, I mean, his FIPS 3.63 hasn't been quite maybe as good as his ERA, but I mean, those are like 2.68 ERA is this year is pretty good. And I mean, if you take out 2020, in 2019, he had a 2.75 ERA and a 0.97 WHIP. And that was over a full season. So, I mean, I guess 2019's his upside. It'll just depend what he looks like in spring training. He will be one of those guys to monitor in spring training, especially if this injury is something. He'll be one of those guys where we're watching the velocity, we're watching every start. Could he be 2019 Jack Flaherty again? Because if he is, you know, he's an ace. But there's just going to be a lot to worry about there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Let's close out with Clayton Kershaw. You know, he threw a little today, but they don't know if he's going to be able to start by the end of the season, if he can get ramped up in that amount of time. Remember, we thought, it might be Dodgeritis, right before the All-Star break. And it turns out, no, it's actually something a lot more serious. I dropped him a week and a half ago in TGFBI. Justin Mason picked him up this week. What do you do with Kershaw next year? Say he comes back, pitches, maybe two or three starts in the playoffs. It was okay, 3.5, 4 ERA in the playoffs, nothing special. Are we at the point in his career where you have to discount him a little bit more because of fragility, because of, just age and declining? What are you going to do with him next year?
Yeah, he'll be another one in my projections, with a pretty low innings total. Like, he's at 106 this year. Last year he worked out fine. He threw 58, made 10 starts. Yeah. But again, shortened season, like, we can't take that as being durable. Because again, like, he's someone who's a better pick in April than he is by September. And then before that, like, he hasn't had a 30 start season since 2015. So you got to build in that injury time. And maybe now I have to build in a little more than I would have before. So if before I was projecting maybe like 170 innings, like, maybe next year I need to project like 140. Yeah. And I bet by the time I project 140, 145, I mean, you can build in a little bit of replacement level value, because when he's on your IL, you can use someone else. But he'll be in the number two. He's got a strikeout rate back up this year, so maybe he could be in that low end number two type discussion, mid number two. He was someone who rose a lot in March, late March. I found
he sure did.
People were. It's like once it was, well, like any
mid March storm.
Yes.
Oh, once, sorry. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, once the starting pitcher started moving way up and people started looking around and trying to figure out, like, what am I going to do? How am I going to get a starter? Who can I take once Darvish and Scherzer and these guys are gone? And then Kershaw started finding his way into the end of round two.
Yeah. Although late in the main event, he started going back down. Because remember, he got cuffed around a couple times in spring training. Like, got really crushed, actually.
Yeah.
And I think that... I don't know. I mean, we really have to think about this in a way that, too, like, these innings matter, being able to project, there's a reason why when you run your projections and you give a guy fewer innings, all of that. Oh, I don't know why he spits out a fifth round value, a seventh round value. It's because it really has a big impact. And you start to feel it over the long season there. You're like, oh.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll say, we're looking for guys who throw lots of innings, and then people will say, And I get it. They'll be like, well, you don't get fantasy points for innings. And it's true. It's just that if I'm only going to project Clayton Kershaw for 145 innings next year, then I can only project him for like 160 strikeouts. And if I can only project him for 160 strikeouts, he's not going to get that high in my rankings. And if I'm only projecting him for 145 innings, I can only project him for maybe like 11 wins.
Right.
Something like that, 12 wins maybe. And then, and again, that's going to leave him behind the other pitchers. Now, I will say with Kershaw, there's nothing wrong with the way he's pitched this year. This is his lowest FIP since 2016. So, I mean, he's pitched fine.
That's true.
You know, his whip's below one. But I think just knowing the process, and you know the process too, if I go and plug in a 330 ERA and a 1.00 whip, but I only plug them in across 145 innings with 11 wins and maybe 160 strikeouts, he's not going to come out that high. He's going to come out as a number two starter and maybe not even like a high end. He'll come out as a number two starter, I think.
Yeah.
Those numbers. That's just my guess off the top of my head. But, and it'll be the same thing with Flaherty. I'll project good ratios. It's, am I going to project 140 innings or am I going to project like 175 innings? Cause that's the difference for him of like 45 strikeouts and three or four more wins. And that's what bumps him up your rankings if you're using an SGP formula.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. By the way, update on Flaherty. He did leave the game holding his side. So did he aggravate his oblique? You know, it's something worth checking on.
At least also, that, if it's that, that'd be less concerning for next year.
True.
Yeah.
Also, although, I mean, he was out a long time with his oblique injury. It's not like they rushed him back. Willie Adames has also left tonight's game. I don't have the reason for that yet. So by the time you hear this, we'll have a reason. Unfortunately, we're not just going to hang out.
We'll just stick on here until the game ends. And the reporters get in the locker room.
Sorry, soccer team. I was going to run practice tonight, but I had to wait and find out more about Adames. So So that's going to wrap up today's pod. Want to thank WinBet for their sponsorship. Thank you guys for listening. It means a lot that you know you subscribe, you listen to us. You give us good feedback. We enjoy doing this, and hopefully you got a lot of value out of it. Let us know what you want to hear as we finish down our stretch run. Thanks for listening. James and Clay will be at you tomorrow. Have a great day.